Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, my friends, and welcome back to Catch Up with Louise McSharry. This is a podcast that aims to catch you up and keep you in the loop from the week's events. Even if you've been very busy or you just haven't been that clued in, or maybe you just haven't had any interest really in dipping into what's going on in the world, that's absolutely fine. This is a judgment-free zone, my friends, and hopefully by the end of this hour together, you will feel a little bit more kind of up to date on where things are in the world. I hope you had a lovely week. I actually had a pretty good one. I spent the weekend in Wexford with my kids and spending time with my parents, which I just feel very lucky to be able to have that time with my parents, to spend time with them in their house in Wexford and be beside the sea. It was just very wholesome and lovely, and I feel very fortunate. Access to the sea, I feel like, is a real privilege and joy, and just can make your life so much better. I really love being beside it. Also, my sister gave my mother, I'm using air quotes, an Uni pizza oven for Christmas. And I was like, one, that's an extremely generous present. Two, that present is not for my mother. I was like, this is a present for you, but also for all of us, because we'll all get to use it. So anyway, it had been sitting in the shed outside my parents' house in Wexford until a couple of weeks ago. And then I said, look, let's give it a go. So now, the last couple of weekends I've been there, I have been trying to perfect my pizza dough and my Uni pizza oven pizza making technique. And it's been quite interesting because I am not the food person in my family. My husband is an amazing cook, and he is the person who's responsible for the majority of the food that's made in our house. He certainly is the, like, you know, head chef. Even if I'm cooking, it's at his direction. But now this has become my thing. I'm the pizza girl. And, you know, it's been an emotional roller coaster. I found the first week quite stressful, but now I feel like I'm on a path to success. If you have any secrets, please do send them my way. I would happily receive them. Otherwise, I went to see Where the Crawdads Sing this week. I got to see a preview of the film, which is obviously based on the Delia Owens book. Delia Owens, is that her name? I think it is. It stars Daisy Edgar-Jones, who of course played Marianne in Normal People, and that's how we all came to love her. And she may be popping up on the podcast soon, just saying. But it was really nice to go and see the film. I was a bit nervous because I really, really loved that book. I loved it so, so much. But you know yourself, when you go to see a film that's based on a book, you just never really know how it's going to go. You never really know whether or not you're going to love it, or whether it's going to kind of, you know, evoke the same kind of feelings that the book did. But I actually found it to be very successful. I very much enjoyed it and would recommend it. But as I said, we'll be talking more about that next week. Anyway, let's get on with the catching up, because we have to start with the news as we always do. Aoife Moore was there to take us through the events this week, and I'm laughing already because let me just first apologize. If you are in any way scientific, if you work in science, if you have a passing interest in space, I really feel we let you down in our conversation about the images that came from NASA this week. Look, we did our very best. We're not good at everything, okay? And science is not, I'm sorry, okay? Aoife Moore, technically between jobs, but soon to be political correspondent with the Times.
Model/actress.
Good morning to you.
Good morning.
So we've got a lot to talk about, as always. And the first, I actually found this hilarious when I saw the headline and the tweet. UK government to table no confidence vote on itself.
Yeah, the Brits are never not at it. Okay, so the British government is going to table a confidence motion in itself after they rejected a Labour motion that directly criticised Boris Johnson. So Boris, as we know, also between jobs.
Yes.
he has been ousted. He has resigned. But he is the caretaker prime minister. What Labour wanted to do was table a motion of no confidence and try and bring down the government to force an election.
Yeah.
They wouldn't let Labour do that because it directly criticised, the wording of theirs directly criticised Boris Johnson. So they said, what we'll do is we'll table a motion of confidence in the government. And so they're all going to vote on it. It has been done in Ireland a couple of times, but it's not something that's ever really done in Britain. Basically, they're making them vote confidence in the government rather than no confidence.
Right. Okay.
So they said it wasn't
I'll be tabling a vote of confidence myself later on today.
I do that for myself every day. So it's to force they've basically backed the Tories and the corner now that they have to vote confidence in themselves.
Okay.
There is concern that the Tories have lost a lot of people already.
Yeah, how confident could they be?
Yeah, I don't think that I think they will be fine. I don't think you'll see an election.
Yeah.
But it is just this never-ending chaos of the British government. It's almost as if when you elect a clown, you get a circus.
It's kind of a delight, to be honest. Yeah. I mean, from the outside, obviously, I realise that there are serious implications, but as something to talk about, it's certainly a bit of a laugh. Now, not a laugh. This week was the 12th of July, obviously. Mm-hmm. And I saw you and many other people tweeting about the bonfires,
mm-hmm.
which obviously have been a feature of the celebrations around the 12th of July by unionists in Northern Ireland for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like this year, more than ever, people are saying, hang on a second, this is not okay.
This is something I have grown up with my entire life.
Yeah.
This is something that I've become really used to. You know, my housemate, me and Kate, were talking about this. She's from the north as well. We were shocked at how shocked southern people were because we were kind of saying, well, we see this every year.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen pictures of my murdered uncle on a bonfire. I have seen my friends who ran for election for different parties, their election posters on bonfires. So
just to pause for a second, if we accept then that there is a general lack of knowledge in the Republic
absolutely.
Of Ireland
oh, absolutely.
About this stuff, can you just explain
yeah.
where the bonfires come
from?
So
the 12th of July celebrates, long story short, a Protestant king's victory over a Catholic king in 1690.
Mm-hmm.
The 11th night is the night before the 12th. So the 12th is a day of culture. There's no doubt about it. You know, you have marching bands, they wear uniforms, and they celebrate this battle. The 11th night is the night before when they build bonfires all over the north, some incredibly close to housing estates, usually in poverty-stricken housing estates, I would say, in loyalist communities. With crates, they build huge pyres and they set them alight. Now, what they have done, and they have done this for years, is what they then put Irish flags, pride flags. Now, this is not all the bonfires, but it is a lot of them. Pictures of politicians they don't like. They put up effigies. This year, they had effigies of Naomi Long, who is the head of the Alliance Party and the Justice Minister, Michelle O'Neill, who is the First Minister and head of Sinn Féin in the North, and Mary Lou McDonald. They hung effigies of them from the bonfires. There's a number of them that said they had racial epithets. They said they write KAT, which is kill all Tags. So Tag is a derogatory word for a Catholic.
Mm.
Every Catholic in the north knows what KAT means. It is a way to intimidate your neighbours.
Mm.
The thing this year as well is that someone died. A young man fell from a pyre and died while he was building a bonfire. This is no longer an issue of culture. This is an issue of, like, first of all, safety.
Mm.
And I have read so many reports this week of people who were there on the 11th and saying tourists who were saying they were terrified.
Yeah.
Like when you go and you watch the 12 celebrations in Belfast City Centre, it is a celebration. There is like amazing musical talent. There's dancing. They have like marching bands. I absolutely, you know, that is culture. The 11th night is intimidation of people and it is incredibly dangerous. I'm surprised that more people aren't hurt on the 11th because when the pyre catches fire, it falls over.
Yeah.
And these are not in like big spaced out fields. A lot of them are in densely packed council estates.
And they're very, like, they're really high.
They're huge, yeah.
Yeah.
And, like, don't get me wrong, I would also point out the nationalist community also do this. So our bonfire night is in August and the nationalist community are not innocent in this as well. You will often see Rangers tops, Union Jacks, names of people who maybe policemen who've been murdered. We saw that before. So it goes, definitely does go both ways. But I feel like this year there has been a different type of kind of hatefulness that we always see. But this year I do think it has been made, it is worse.
Yeah. I mean, what can you do about that? Is there anything?
And this is the thing. The politicians in Ireland don't want to speak out about it as well. But there is no place. I really and genuinely believe that if there is racial epithets, if there is a picture of someone who has been murdered, if there is a picture of politicians, the bonfire should be stopped.
Yeah.
If you want to have a bonfire, fair enough, we can talk about having a bonfire, but that is hate.
Yeah.
If it was, the point was made continually, if it was black people, Jews, Muslims, they would not be allowed to have those bonfires and have those things on them.
Yeah.
Somebody needs to step up and say, this is no longer culture.
Yeah.
And it has to come from the unionist community.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, things are changing.
They are.
There's no doubt about it. So who knows how that might develop over the next few years. Now, Stephen Donnelly this week said a report on the reality facing many women in Ireland in the context of abortion was heartbreaking.
Yeah, it is. But they knew this was going to happen. Sorry.
Sorry, I set you off
there. Full disclosure, one of the people, one of the statistics in this who travelled for a fetal abnormality, I know and care about one of those people who was forced to travel. And they were told, the Irish government were told when they were making the abortion legislation that this would happen. So the way it works is it came out this week and last week there was new statistics that said, you know, that 58 women who sought abortions, there were 58 women who sought abortions for fetal abnormality for a myriad of reasons. But what they have found is that the restrictions to accessing abortion in Ireland is forcing women to travel. A lot to do is to do with the time period. So it's 12 weeks is the cutoff, which is quite short because a lot of people might be 15 weeks before they realise that they had a fetal abnormality. And, you know, we know all the things, lack of access, lack of doctors who are performing abortions, the 3-day wait is pushing people over the limit. So Stephen Donnelly, the Minister for Health, said, you know, it was heartbreaking and, you know, they don't want to see this happening. The only good thing I would say is that the Safe Access Zones bill was implemented this week and it secures staff and women who are entering maternity hospitals from protesters. And that they can, it's like a buffer zone. So that people who are, I'm going to use the words, aggressively praying outside hospitals, there'll be a buffer zone. So that will be implemented next year.
That's great news. I don't know if you heard the interview I did with Emily Pine on the podcast, but it was something that she spoke about the challenge of, you know, having experienced pregnancy loss and you know, infertility in her family, that the challenge of walking up to Hollis Street and walking by those people. It was incredibly difficult. And I know there have got to be people, women listening and countless people who have had to access services for any number of reasons who have to encounter those people. Mm. Like people who are in, you
people who are having miscarriages.
Exactly. And, people whose hearts are broken and people who have fetal abnormalities and women who are just accessing abortion. Like, you know, that's a really good piece of news. Now, maybe Stephen Donnelly and his broken heart will take action on this. Fingers crossed. Okay, I promised last week we'd have some good news. And we've got two good stories to talk about this week. And the first, now, I won't lie. I have tried to get my head around this stuff, but I am not a science gal.
Oh, me either. But so NASA, this is going to be great.
NASA has released incredible imagery of galaxies from outer space via a new satellite yoke.
Basically, a $10 billion space telescope, which sounds like something I just made up, but that's real. So they released, and I'm sure everyone saw it because it was on everyone's Instagram stories. You're so smart. So, so yeah, they released these images of what is called a stellar nursery. And they're two pictures, and they were presented on Tuesday to mark this new lab that's opening. So they show stars. It's like a number of galaxies. It's the most detailed picture that we have ever seen of space. It's amazing.
Like, it is amazing. Look at it,
have you seen the meme where it shows you the picture of space and then the picture of someone on CCTV?
No.
And they're like, why can this photo be so good and this one be so terrible?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it'll give us the ability, not us, but give us the ability to look deeper into the universe. Detect events occurring further back in time more than 13.5 billion years ago.
Yeah, see, that's where I get confused. I can't, like, I read it over and over and over again. I watched the scientists be excited. I'm delighted for them. I tried really hard, but no. I just can't. It's the whole space-time continuum thing, you know.
This is so far over my head as
I'm
well.
I'm just not.
I'm sorry, dude. Like, there's probably scientists listening to this. I know. Being like, listen to those two idiots.
I know, I'm sorry. It's just but we couldn't ignore it.
It's a really good picture.
I mean, it is beautiful.
Beautiful.
And it did make me think, wow.
And technically, you're in that picture.
The majesty of the universe.
Yeah.
But am I in that picture, yeah, or is that picture from 13.5 million years ago?
No, they're not taking a picture of 13.5 million years ago, billion years ago, but they can detect events that happened 13.5 billion years ago.
Because of the picture?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm never going to get there. I know. Look, guys, sorry. We've probably failed you on this, but we had to acknowledge it. Okay, now to something more in our wheelhouse. A pregnant woman in Texas is fighting a ticket she got for driving in a carpool lane in the context of Roe v. Wade.
This is sort of funny and sort of depressing at the same time. So this lady in Texas, for anyone who's driven in America, they have these lanes. It's to deal with traffic and that you have to have more than one person in the car with you if you want to drive on this in this lane. This lady, Brandy, of course she's called Brandy, she is 34 weeks pregnant, and she was stopped by the police, and the policeman said, you can't drive in this lane because there's no one else in the car with you. And she said, well, there is, because I'm 34 weeks pregnant, and in light of everything else that's going on in America right now, this is a baby. You have decided, the government has decided this is a baby. So she is now going to fight. It would be a very small fine that she would get. But she said, nah, like, the way she put it is that the Supreme Court can't have it both ways. Yeah. It's either a person or it's not.
Yeah.
She made a really good point. She said, if we're talking about a fetus being a person, there's a lot of other rights that attach to a person that could be litigated in the courts. Does it qualify for citizenship, tax deduction, child support? She made the point that this will all now be litigated in the court. She said that the policeman kind of brushed her off and was like, listen, if you fight this, they're just going to drop it. And she was like, well, I have now waste my time to go to court and sort this. But she does make a broader point that if that's what you've decided, if you're deciding that life begins at conception, then that's a person for all intents and purposes. And she is going to drive in the people lane.
I love someone who wants to make a point, really committing to making that point.
Really aggressively.
I will never not love that.
She is also now getting like loads and loads of horrible abuse online.
Of course she is,
She's a woman on the internet.
And I will say, she actually didn't intentionally go in that carpool lane. She was trying to, she got a bit like kind of bamboozled on the motorway and ended up in the lane by mistake. So it's not that she wasn't even setting out to do anything wrong in the first place.
It is a wider point though that this is the way America is going. And if you have decided that life begins at conception, then are we going to ask fellas, do you pay child support during the pregnancy?
Because
if you have to feed the baby, you have to keep yourself alive to feed the baby. Are you going to make them pay for food? Because that's their living thing now.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, if they care about these children, air quotes, in the way that they suggest that they do, then surely they should be providing for them financially. the government perhaps should be providing for them financially from conception. Yeah, there's a lot to discuss.
Yeah, the sarcasm dripping from our voices.
Aoife Moir, soon to be political correspondent at the Times, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Now, my guest for this week's interview is a woman who saw a problem and wants to solve it so that other women don't have to have the same experience that she had. I am endlessly impressed by women like her, by people like her, who have a bad experience and decide that they don't want anyone else to have the same experience. So I was delighted that she agreed to share her experience with us today. It's Erica Tierney. Erica, I first came to hear of you when I learned about the Irish Cancer Society's campaign regarding maternity leave, but maybe introduce yourself for people who aren't familiar with that and who don't know you at all.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, my name is Erica Tierney. I'm 36. I'm a Dub originally, but kind of living in Salins in Kildare right now with a little bit of travel. I'm a scientist by background. So degree, PhD in kind of biology, organ regeneration. And now I work for a pharmaceutical company.
Okay, wow. Organ regeneration. So that's so casually.
Sounds really cool, but really you're messing around with cells and a lot of fluids in the lab.
I mean, again, that sounds very impressive to me.
Yeah. And you know what? It kind of is like a past life thing. I haven't done that work since about 2016. So I've been mucking around in a pharmaceutical company since then. Obviously, I've been not working since the end of 2019.
Yeah.
But I will be getting back into that soon, hopefully the end of summer.
So let's talk about what happened at the end of 2019.
So September 2019, gearing up to have our first little baby, Rosha. In and around 28 weeks pregnant, I would have discovered a lump, literally at that backwards turtle stage of pregnancy where I was just brushing off my, I ended up brushing off myself getting up off the couch and I was like, ooh, what the hell is that?
It must have been quite big then, was it?
It was. So it was a 5 centimeter tumor and it was quite prominent. So I could feel it really well under my skin. The best way I can describe it is that it was like a jagged edged little stone. It was really irregular. And it just felt absolutely rock hard.
And it was on your chest, kind of?
Yeah, so it was on the breast near the nipple area on the top side. So I have a sister who's a midwife. So right away I was like, hey, Aveen, so I found this thing. And she was immediately trying to put my mind at ease. She was like, look, there's so many changes to the breast during pregnancy. It's probably fibrous tissue. Like, really don't worry. But go to the GP.
Yeah.
So I went to the GP.
And how were you feeling? I suppose it's hard though, because you're pregnant. You're probably tired anyway.
Yeah. Like,
but were you feeling sick?
I was really tired. So I had quite bad hyperemesis when I was pregnant as well.
Yeah. That's chronic sickness.
Yeah. So I had days where I was getting sick 20 times a day.
Okay. So you couldn't even have known if you weren't feeling well in another capacity.
Yeah. Exactly. I was just exhausted anyway. So when I went to the GP, that was one of her key questions. She was like, have you lost weight? Do you feel really tired? And I was like, well, I'm very heavily pregnant, so I haven't really lost any weight. And I am really tired as well, you know, with all the hyperemesis going on. So I remember that day when she did the physical examination, she left the room to talk to a colleague. So that was kind of the first alarm bell. I was like, she wants to confer with somebody. Maybe this isn't going to be so good.
I know that feeling.
Yeah. And it's that stuff that like just is like a trigger in your head.
My one was the day that I went, I had been seeing a consultant every week.
Okay.
For like 3 months because they couldn't figure out what was wrong with me. And the last day I went, the doctor who was on the consultant's team, who I'd seen loads, like I, you know, she'd given me her phone number. Like, you know, we were very familiar with each other. And when she walked through the waiting room, she didn't make eye contact with me.
Oh.
And I was like, oh,
yeah,
something bad is about to happen.
Yeah. And I had that as well. The day I got the diagnosis in Beaumont, the consultant brought a nurse in with him. And I was like, oh, here we go.
Yeah.
He's bringing in someone for emotional support. It's going to be tough. And I knew instantly at that point that it was going to be pretty bad news.
Yeah. And were you on your own?
No, I was with my husband.
Okay.
So I went through the rapid screening service. So within 2 weeks, they had done pathology, everything, bloods. So I was diagnosed 2 weeks later.
Right.
And I would have been 30 weeks pregnant at that stage.
Okay.
So that was absolutely crazy. My husband, Shane, will hate me for saying this, but he was in such shock that he actually fainted.
Oh, no.
When we were in the room getting the bad news. We laugh at it now because it was just one of those crazy, crazy things.
But it's totally understandable.
Yeah.
I mean, that's so much to think about. Where did your mind go first?
I guess I kind of describe myself as a really logical, practical person.
Sure.
So I was sitting there like, right, what are we doing? What's the next plan?
Yeah.
But it kind of snowballed. So when they first said the words, my head just immediately went to, oh, this is going to be a little lumpectomy.
Yeah.
And it's fine. But they were very quick to say, it's pretty aggressive. It's pretty advanced. We need to act really quickly here. We don't have a lot of time to kind of decide what the treatment plan is. So there was immediate talk of having a mastectomy.
Mm.
So literally about 10 days later, I had the breast removed.
Wow.
While I think I would have been about 32-ish weeks pregnant at that stage. So that was scary because I was just worried about the baby. I was like, what does a general anesthetic do to a baby? I'm going to be out for quite a while here having this surgery. Is she going to be okay? Who's monitoring her?
Yeah.
And I think it was the first thing I said when I woke up. I was like, is the baby okay?
Yeah.
And it was quite hard going through the hospitals because it was very upsetting for all the medical professionals as well, seeing me so heavily pregnant and then having to treat me. So
they must have felt such a huge sense of responsibility.
I can only imagine.
Yeah. It's also a huge thing. I mean, there's so many layers to that. And I know so many women have this experience, you know, of being pregnant and getting a diagnosis like that. Like, I have counted my lucky stars so many times that I, you know, was in my pre-children life. I mean, there are different complications that come with that, but you know, the only thing I had to worry about when I was sick was myself. Like, that was it. Whereas, you know, you had to think about your baby, but also that's not a long time to get your head around a big change in your body like a mastectomy.
And you know, I was very much into breastfeeding. I had been doing lots of classes. I mentioned my sister is a midwife, so she was giving me lots of like private coaching, do this, don't do that, etc. So at first I was gung-ho that I was going to try and breastfeed with one breast, and I was seeing a specialist to help me with that. But then because we later found out I only had such a short window after having the baby to having chemo, there was only 3 weeks there.
Yeah.
So you can't breastfeed when you have chemo. So then the medical advice turned into, look, again, your supply comes in, you're going to be stopping. So it just became inadvisable to do it.
But that's another loss.
Oh, that was so hard.
Yeah.
That was really, really hard. And I think, you know, as a first-time mother, you have all these ideas in your head as how it's going to be. But I just had to accept, okay, this is what I have to do, and started researching what was the best formula because I knew I couldn't do it.
I had a complicated breastfeeding journey, but I, you know, for completely different reasons, I had to accept that it wasn't going to happen for me. And I felt that loss. I still feel it now. I still feel like, you know, it was a loss for me and it was a loss for my son. And even though, of course, like logically, you know, your baby is fed, your baby is fine. I mean, I have two healthy sons.
Yeah.
You have a healthy daughter. You know, there's no issue there. It still is a loss.
Yeah, it's a loss. And I felt like another kind of form of incapacitation as well, where I just couldn't provide something that I thought she really needed.
Yeah.
That's really how I thought about it.
Yeah. Mm. So, as you said, after that surgery, how was that recovery and stuff, and then the end of your pregnancy?
Yeah, the recovery was really hard. It was more difficult than I anticipated. And as time was going on, I was obviously getting more and more pregnant. So I had a lot of physiotherapy to do.
Mm.
We knew before surgery that the cancer had spread to the lymph nodes under my arm. So I had, I think, about 5 tumors there as well. So they all had to be removed too. So I ended up having really restricted movement in my arm because they removed the entire lymph node system under my arm. It's still numb to this day. It still puffs up every now and again because there's no lymphatic system. I had like a lot of restricted movement, but I think I found a lot of strength in doing my physio 3 times a day because I was like, I need to hold my baby. Like, I can't have this arm with like a lack of strength.
Yeah.
So like I think I just found like a lot of motivation in each little thing. I was like, this is really hard, but I have to fix it by the time she comes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I just kind of threw myself into the physio. And I also had like loads and loads of medical appointments at that stage.
Of course.
You know, so I was like being seen by the team at the Coombe, but then I'd also be like meeting my medical oncologist, meeting the breast surgeon, meeting the breast care nurse.
Yeah, like one of those things.
Yeah.
Like, you know, early cancer diagnosis and late pregnancy, like, and one of those things is a lot of medical appointments. Yeah. So if you combine the two,
Yeah, so pretty much every day, you know, was a medical appointment. It just was like, are we going to the happy place today or are we going to the sad place? That's just the best way I could describe it. And then there was like, I was trying to be as prepared as possible. So I was going to Roach's to talk about shaving my head and like what wig I'd like and like buying turbans online.
Yeah.
And buying turbans for her too. So I have loads of photos where she's in a turban, I'm in a turban, because it just looks so cute on her.
Yeah.
I was like, if I'm going to look like a baby, you are a baby. So come along with me on this one.
I love that.
Yeah. Like we had a lot of fun as well. Like it was a really, really traumatic time, but kind of knocked a little bit of crack out of it too, you know, just it had to be done.
I totally, like, I completely relate to that, because, and I think as Irish people we're very good at that, like we find the humor. You have to find the humor, because like if you're not laughing you're crying, like,
exactly.
And at the end of the day, I don't know about you, but I was surprised by how quickly I just kind of settled into, well, this is just what it is and I just have to get on with it. And, you know, sure, I remember the day after I was diagnosed getting up and crying on the toilet and just being like, what is this life?
Yeah.
But like fairly quickly it was just like, okay, next thing, next thing. Because what else can you do?
Exactly. I used to love a good cry in the shower. I'd do that in the morning and then I'd be like, okay, now what are we doing for the rest of the day? Set myself up for the day.
Yeah.
But we really took it day by day, like, and I felt like that was our only choice.
Yeah.
You know, so even when we had Rocha, we just had a plan for every single day, whether it was a chemo day, whether it was a rest day. I had days where I was in a lot of pain from the drugs I was on, where I literally couldn't get out of bed.
Yeah.
So it was like constantly just like, well, what are we going to be able to do on that day that's coming?
Yeah.
And you know what? In the end, when COVID knocked on the door, it was actually like a big favor.
Yeah.
Because I was exhausted. Yeah. Like I actually just needed all that or and or time.
And was that after Rocha was born?
So yeah, before? So Rocha was born November 19 and then COVID happened that March.
Yeah.
So COVID actually did me a solid in that I was able to skip my last chemo session because the drugs I was on affected your lungs. And then I had radiation at the start of COVID. So I was in and out of the hospital every day for radiation. And it was at that point in COVID where we didn't know a lot about it.
Yeah.
We weren't wearing masks. I was like petrified going in and out of the hospital.
Yeah, because of course, if you had finished your chemotherapy, which obviously compromises your immune system.
Exactly.
I thought a lot about people like us, people who were, you know, having chemo during COVID, and how scary it must have been.
Yeah, like I would come home and I would take all the clothes I had worn to the hospital and just put them in a bin bag, and then I'd leave them there for a couple of weeks, like, and then wash them. So like we had all these like bin bags in the hall, and then I'd go and have a shower, and I wouldn't like be in contact with Shane or Rocha until I felt clean. So it was crazy. And we also went from having lots of people in the house helping us to going into this little bubble with just Shane, Rocha and I. Which was really hard. So at that point Shane just had to take carer's leave from work.
I was gonna say, how was he working that?
I actually don't even know how he worked while I was sick even before that. I just wouldn't have had the mental capacity, so to this day I just think, how did you do that? So then he took about 3 months carer's leave until I was kind of getting stronger and stronger and I could do most of the minding.
And how did you feel when Rocha was born? Was it a relief that at least
she was fine? It was such a relief. I think my mom felt it most. I've never seen her look as worried, and then just the weight that lifted off her shoulders when I was like, she's here, she's perfect, she's fine. Because although my little brain was saying, look, there's going to be no effects on her, I found out later in my pregnancy, you still have like that tiny worry at the back of your head.
Because you worry about your baby anyway.
Exactly.
Like, even if there isn't any kind of additional thing. So of course you did.
So that, that was like a huge joy that there she was and like how perfect she was.
So Rocha was born. You started your chemo shortly after that. Then you finished chemo around the time of COVID kicking off.
Yeah.
Did your radiation. Mm-hmm. And so when you finished all that, what kind of time of the year was that?
So that was May 2020.
May 2020.
So I had just come to the end of radiation, and then I got a letter in the post from the Department of Social Welfare to say that my maternity leave was up next week. And so at that point, that was just such a trigger to me, because all the way along, I kind of just felt like, this isn't right. I should not be on maternity leave right now, because I physically can't do all of the things that you're supposed to do in maternity leave.
Yeah.
I missed out on like a lot of bonding. I missed out on breastfeeding. I literally physically wasn't there a lot of the time because I was in hospital or I was in bed. So when I got that
letter, because let's be clear, like when you're having chemo, it affects everyone differently, but like not only do you spend a lot of time in hospital actually getting the chemo, but you're also tired and sometimes sick, and you know, you're certainly not present in your life in the way that you would be at another time.
Exactly. It's like, it's really hard. The best way I can describe it is just trying to keep my head above water.
Yeah.
Like for me to be okay. But then I was also like, I want to spend as much time as possible holding her, doing all those things, you know, because I was diagnosed in the September. She came in the November, and I didn't find out until Christmas Eve that it was stage three and not stage four.
Right.
Because there's a lot of scans they can't do when you're pregnant. So, you know, I was looking at her going, I really hope I'm going to be here for a very long time. So, like, the fact that I just had to be on my maternity leave when I should have been on illness leave, it just bugged me so much. I can't even explain how much it annoyed me.
That's as it stands at the moment. If you're sick on your maternity leave, it's still your maternity leave. Maternity leave supersedes sick leave.
Absolutely. It trumps all.
So then when your maternity leave is up, it's gone. Like you never get that back.
No. So, and the thing that really irks me as well is that if Rosha was the one that was sick and hospitalized, I could have deferred my maternity leave. If my husband Shane was sick, he could defer his paternity leave. But we have no mechanism in place for when the woman is sick.
That's wild.
Isn't it?
So if Rosha was sick on the basis that she's sick, you're not having that time that maternity leave is kind of afforded for.
Yeah.
You know, so, okay, totally reasonable, defer it.
Mm-hmm. You get an extension or you get it deferred. Yeah.
But there's nothing if you're the mother and you're sick.
Nothing as the mother of the child.
It's just kind of typical, isn't it?
Yeah. And you know what? I've thought about this a lot. I really think it's an oversight. I don't think there's anyone sitting in the doll with malicious intent here. So the Maternity Leave Act was last revised in Ireland in 2004.
Mm-hmm.
The Paternity Leave Act was revised in 2016. Mm. So I just feel like no one has actually looked at it in detail since then.
Yeah.
We've had a few amendments. So if you have a premature baby, you can get it extended. That came in 2017.
I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And we got extra leave for anyone who had a baby during COVID. So it's just at that point now where we just have to really highlight this issue. We're lobbying politicians to get cross-party support on it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's anybody in this land who would say, oh, sorry, I don't think you need that. There's going to be no opposition.
Yeah.
So it's just a matter of highlighting it, doing a lot of advocacy and really pushing for the change.
Yes.
It really bothers me that there's still one woman a week going through this.
Yeah.
That's just too much.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And like, you know, you can't do a lot for people when they have a cancer diagnosis. You have to get through the treatment, you know. We can give a lot of supports in other ways, but this is just something that would mean a lot.
Mm.
I've met a lot of other women along the way who've had the same thing happen. And we all feel so strongly about this part.
Yeah, and it's easily fixed.
Exactly. It's just a tiny amendment to legislation.
Yeah.
And boom, there we go.
Well, hopefully they're listening and hopefully we'll see that change soon.
Yeah.
Can I ask, like, how are you now?
I'm so much better now. I thought I would be long finished with this journey. I still have one more surgery to go for the reconstruction side. So I have that next week.
Okay.
And then I'm looking forward to just, you know, being done and dusted and getting back to work and normality.
Yeah, it's
or the
pretty
new
great.
Normal.
I say to, you know, whenever someone gets diagnosed, and it happens in all of our lives, you know, we all know the statistics. Cancer is extremely common.
Mm-hmm.
And I always say, like, you know, I honestly don't think about my cancer very often at all anymore.
Yeah, I
really don't.
That's really good to hear as well, you know, because I find that as well, like the further I get from it, like I can go for weeks now without thinking about it, whereas it used to be hourly.
Constant. Yeah. Well, Erica, thank you so, so much for chatting to me. It's great to meet you. And I think the campaign is fantastic. And well done you for speaking up and speaking out. And I'm so glad that you're doing so well.
Thanks, Louise. Thanks for having me.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Between Khloe Kardashian's surrogacy news and Jen Shah's guilty plea, there was a lot to get into in the world of entertainment this week. So thankfully, writer and podcaster Esther O'More Donoghue was up for catching us up. Esther O'More Donoghue, it is wonderful to have you back with us this week. I sent you an emergency SOS. I said, I need someone with the housewives knowledge this week because, of course, there was a lot of movements in that department. But first, we have to address the Khloe Kardashian surrogacy, which I have only seen three people this morning, and all of them have said to me, Khloe Kardashian's having another baby by surrogacy with Tristan Thompson. Why is she doing that? But of course, it's not that she's having another baby in a romantic way with Tristan Thompson, is it?
No. Well, let's refresh the memory for a second. So they started dating in 2016. A lot has happened. It's now 2022. There's a lot's gone on in this dynamic. The first child in 2018, 2019, reports came out that he cheated with her sister Kylie's best friend, Jordan. They split for a time. They got back together. They worked on the relationship. We saw some of it documented. It came out that Tristan had yet cheated again with another woman, fathered a child when they were together. We saw it happen in real time. We were like, she said, I'm humiliated, et cetera, et cetera. But it emerges yesterday, 2 days ago, that in fact they are having a second child via surrogate that was conceived a month before his son was born, the son that he had with another woman. Can you keep up with this? And so the sibling could be here, the new sibling between Khloe and Tristan could be here later this month or next month. So another baby is on the way. They're going to be co-parenting, but they're not back together.
Yeah. And so this baby was conceived in November and they broke up in December because that's when all the stuff came out about Tristan cheating again. And by the way, let's not forget that when Khloe was having True, their first daughter, literally the date, like she went into labor just after finding out that he cheated on her for the first time. Like this man is a scumbag. But the conversations I've been having with people are just like absolutely shocked. How, why would she do this? Blah, 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 blah. But they were back together at the time that it was conceived. And also, like, they talked about doing this before they were back together because it was all on not the most recent series of the Kardashians, the one that was on Disney Plus, but the last series of Keeping Up with the Kardashians. It was all on there and they weren't together, but they were exploring these options because Khloe wanted a sibling for True and she was told she would be high risk if she were to carry the baby herself. So they were looking at this kind of option long ago.
A few months ago, Tristan and I made embryos, and during that time I was also told that I would not be smart if I carried my second pregnancy. I would be high risk. and to explore surrogacy options. So Tristan and I have decided that's what we're going to do. I have a surrogate agent who is, you know, sort of filtering through who they think might be the best fit for me and my family.
It is a big commitment and you want to find the right fit, but we got this. It's a new chapter. We'll get through this together.
Thank you.
She has got to have been fuming when this happened in December because of this.
Mm-hmm. Because I think if we go back to the latest series of the Kardashians, they did sort of allude to, you know, it's more serious. There's, you know, there's more here, but we didn't even think. But I guess this is what they all knew. They're like, what? Because they had been like working on it. And in a, not just like working between the two of them. They kind of brought different parties in and they're, now we know they're trying to conceive a child. So, and now it's all out and, you know, they've got to go through it, through it all again. I mean, timing is just not his forte. And I just, you know, as they kind of, hopefully they seem to kind of co-parent well together. I mean, I don't know. We're not in the room, but this is what's happening and the Kardashians just keep giving and it's going to be all, you know, next season, which is launching in September. So we don't really have that, you know, long to wait until we kind of see it happen.
Oh, again. I can't wait. And they've already released a little clip. So we know that Pete Davidson's going to be in it, which I'm very much looking forward to. These Kardashians, like every time you think you're out, they pull you back in. Do you know what I mean?
I mean, that's it. I mean, could I mind my own personal life with this explosive dynamic storylines? No, I just absolutely couldn't.
No.
It's just something going on. They've got big lives, they've got big personalities. And yeah, just when we think we're out, they pull us back in and you know, let them sell their skin creams and their underwear and we support them. And we support Chloe.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so I mentioned at the top that we had some huge Housewives news this week. And it's funny, like I made my husband sit and listen to me as I explained this drama to him because it is such huge news. So even if you're not a Housewives person, you need to listen to this. Esther, tell us the story of Jen Shah.
I'm going to tell you the story about a little girl called Jen Shah. Okay, so Jen Shah, I'm trying to Irishify her. Jen Shah, she's a different person. And we talked, there's a whole other episode we're going to do about Jen Shah. But we'll talk Jen Shah.
Jennifer Shaw, she's from Kilmacudden.
She's from Troom. And is that okay? Anyway, never mind.
Who knows?
Jen Shah, she's a cast member of The Real Housewives of Salt Lake City. Is it the latest franchise?
Dubai is probably the latest, but a very recent one. Yeah.
Correct. So it's only new. It's only born 2 seasons in. They've already wrapped season 3. So, this is kind of like a Kardashians happening in real time. She was arrested on March 30th, 2021 in Salt Lake City for her alleged involvement in a national telemarketing fraud scheme. And she was charged with conspiracy to commit wire fraud in connection with telemarketing and conspiracy to commit money laundering. Now, the FBI, we saw during one of the episodes, the girls were going on their road trip in a people carrier. And we see Jen getting a phone call, you know, during the episode going, what? The house is on fire? What, I better go right now? Oh no. She legs it. Moments later, we see the FBI swoop in, kind of enter the bus. We're looking for her, da da da. And she's legged it. And all the women were like, what's going on? And, you know, they didn't want to commit to, you know, supporting her necessarily or whatever, but it was all happening in real time. And she's been defiantly protesting her innocence.
She got arrested. They found her. They arrested her.
They found her. She was fired, but she was released on $1 million bond. And so she was out living her life and she was being defiant. She was on the last reunion. She wore purple feathers.
Yeah, she filmed the whole series. Like she was the victim. Like, you know, this is all untrue. Like I never did anything wrong. She said that about 100 times, crying on camera. But at the same time, like, you know, holding parties and like, yeah, wearing feathers to a reunion. Like you really, I bought it. I actually bought it. I was like, I don't think she did this because if you did it, Like, because the accusation was that she had basically, she had this, like, you know, lead generating business. And the accusation, I think, was that she was selling, intentionally kind of selling the information of vulnerable people, older and vulnerable people, so that they could be taken advantage of via kind of sales schemes and stuff on the phone. And I was like, no person who had done that would be filming this series and like acting like everything's normal and protesting innocence on, like, you know, an international television program. But then... This week,
I know she leaned into it. I'm sure she had merch created and everything. She was leaning in, and then it was cut to immediately from 2012 to March 2021 in the Southern District of New York and elsewhere. I agreed with others to commit wire fraud. I did this by knowingly providing customer names to people who are marketing business services that had little or no value. So she just she states it in no uncertain terms. She knew what she was doing. She was making ill-gotten gains, and She pled guilty. And so she faces a potential 30 years in prison. I'm sure she'll negotiate down. She's maybe looking at 14 years in prison, but she has to pay $9.5 million in restitution, as well as $6.5 million to the federal government. And people are saying that she had one of, like, on The Real Housewives, she had her Shaw Squad, and they helped her look shamazing.
Oh, she lived, like, really excessively, like, you know.
And these women are not like struggling. They're not looking down the back of the couch for coins, you know, to pay the milk bill. They're all eluded.
Yeah.
But she was really extravagant. I mean, again, but then you're kind of used to it watching these shows. They're all top and they do have extra glam and their looks are ridiculous not ridiculous, but we're not going to walk wearing them into Lidl. But you could if you want, because that's your choice. But, You kind of just accept, like, that they're just living this other world. It's a bit of performance, but she was making huge money. She was ripping people off, and now she's facing the real, you know, very real consequences.
It's wild though, because like they filmed the third series. So like how are they gonna?
They filmed the third series, and you know, I just saw that it was all kind of wrapped up before this happened, and they had no cameras in the court or following her, because she was still like, I'm an innocent baby, look at me go, my Louis Vuitton backpack or whatever. She was still selling this line, but I bet they're going to go back probably and do new confessionals. I mean, they'd have to, because you know, they're missing out, because people want to see that. So I guess they'll go back to the other housewives and
maybe
the ones they have now, perhaps, and do some extra inserts, but it is all wrapped, you know.
Yeah, because they can't just edit together a series where we see an entire series of Jen acting normal and like she's totally innocent, and the women kind of responding to her in that context when we know that she isn't. It's going to be really interesting to see how they get around this. Very interesting indeed.
Yes. Because I mean, Jen was kind of like, you know, chastising some of the women, like, for not supporting her and stuff.
Yeah.
She was lying.
She was lying the whole time. It's wild. Yeah. Like, my anxiety levels would be off the charts. Like, if I, you know, if I tell a tiny lie, I'm like, oh my God, everybody's going to find out. Like, I'm lying awake in my bed at night. Like, you know, I don't know how these people manage to do it. It's wild.
She threw glitter at it, and she put extra feathers on top, and she was like, here. Yeah. And more drama. Again, the housewives just keep giving. The franchise continues. Bravo keeps making millions of dollars.
Yeah. And I keep watching. Okay, let's quickly talk about the Emmys, because the nominations came out this week. And once again, I was kind of struck by the fact that TV really is the big business these days, isn't it? I mean, when you look at the level of talent, like, you know, the A-list actors who are nominated for Emmys via their performances in television, you really see that TV is in its kind of peak era.
Absolutely. Well, the 74th Primetime Emmy Awards will take place in September in Los Angeles, California. Breaking news, I won't be there, unfortunately. We couldn't come to a deal. We couldn't broker a deal, but we'll see. There is still time. This is off the table. HBO and HBO Max have come out strong. I've watched, like, you know, sometimes you think you don't recognize, maybe you go to a festival, you don't recognize some of the bands in the lineup. But like, I know all of these shows. I've watched them all. I've enjoyed them all. For HBO, Succession was the big draw. It got 25 nominations. It's previously won 9 Emmys. It got a nomination for Best Drama Series and acting nominations for the stars Brian Cox, Jeremy Strong, Sarah Snook, Kieran Culkin. And production started on season 4. So there's more of that ahead.
Cannot wait.
I know, I can't wait. White Lotus got 20 nominations, another HBO production. which, yeah, I mean, it's incredible. Like, they're really winning big. Then there was also Netflix Korean show Squid Game became the first ever drama series nominee that isn't in the English language, which is quite incredible. Mm. It picked up 40 nominations, including for the stars. Ozark also picked up 13. So, you know,
Euphoria, 16. Zendaya is amazing. Zendaya is nominated for 4 Emmys because she's nominated for Best Lead Actress. She's nominated for 2 songs, and she's nominated in the producing category. And she's the youngest ever producing nominee in Emmy's history.
She's the youngest ever. Yes, that's it, correct. And well, yeah, which is phenomenal. I mean, she's got good management. She's, yeah, huge talent. So,
and I think she makes good decisions. Like, you know, she's smart, obviously.
Yeah, she's really smart. I mean, she does less is more. There is kind of a mystique, you know, around her. Mm. I mean, it's the one name. She's had the opportunity to curate this incredible career and to have. And it was, I mean, that's where you're making, you know, when you're in production, you're making the decisions, and like, that's where the real power is, because you can be just an actor for hire, but she's, you know, looking at it from a business point of view as well. So, also another Euphoria cast member, Sydney Sweeney, got nominated, but for White Lotus. So that was, yeah. So, I mean, it's like a golden age for TV. There's so much out there for us to watch and enter and enjoy. Anne Hathaway and Jared Leto, though, didn't get any nominations for We Crash, which I thought it was enjoyable. Did you watch it?
No, I didn't, actually.
Well,
sorry. Okay, I didn't have time.
You didn't have time. I know. There's so much going on out there. So the next thing is going to be who's going to be the host for next year. Nothing to be confirmed. Apparently, they've reached out to, you know, Chris Rock. I mean, I'm sure everyone's rich for him. They want some Chris Rock energy at the award ceremony. Jimmy Fallon, Seth Meyers, but that's all she's excited. We'll see.
Quickly, Florence Pugh posted some photographs of herself this week on her Instagram. She wore a dress for, I believe it was the Valentino Couture show, that was kind of sheer on top. So her boobies were out on display somewhat. And she wrote an interesting Instagram post about it and the response to it.
Yeah, Louise sent me the headline, Florence Pugh on boobs. And I was like, that sounds very dramatic. Florence Pugh on boobs, yeah. People are getting in a tizzy over Florence Pugh's tits and women's tits generally. If it's not the breast, it's the reproductive rights. Am I right? And they got themselves in a fizz over.
They're getting on my tits, I'll tell you that much. Hey,
thank you. Ayo. This episode is sponsored by the word tits. We love it. We love to see it. So she's at Valentino Couture in Rome last Friday. She wore a gorgeous pink dress, sheer material. You could see her nipples. People had opinions, which may shock and surprise some of you. As you said, she posted a pic of her in the dress with a long caption. And we love a long caption. And she said she skewed it to men, you know, observing and making comments. She says, what's been interesting to watch and witness is just how easy it is for men to totally destroy a woman's body publicly, proudly, for everyone to see. You do it with your job titles and work emails in your bio, which is so odd. I don't know. Yeah. So, I mean, it's like, these are not anonymous people. It just doesn't seem the smartest thing to do. And what a lame thing to comment on. Like, just don't say anything. It's so strange. So many of you wanted to aggressively let me know how disappointed you were by my tiny tits, or how I should be embarrassed for being so flat-chested. But, you know, yeah, you can't win. Your boobs too big, boobs too small. Why'd you get fake boobs? Except, you know, people have opinions. She said, I've lived my body for a long time. I'm fully aware of my breast size and I'm not scared of it. So she said, people are getting, you know, going nuts over her revealing a bit of, not even revealing a bit of skin. She's covered up. She says, all because of 2 cute little nipples. And then she said, hashtag free the nipple. So, yeah.
I mean, it's a long caption, but it's a good point. She's basically like, you know, it's completely insane the way that women's bodies are discussed, one. And number two, that like this part of the body is so, you know, weirdly kind of sexualized and like, you know, deemed to be something that needs to be hidden all the time. And like, as she posted a few photos, and the last photo is her with her fingers over the nipply bits. And she says, the last slide is for those who feel more comfortable with that inch of darker skin covered. And I think that's like that statement is just so it. Like you're literally talking about an inch of skin, like, you know, because you can show the whole boob, but it's just the nipple. Like it's so arbitrary and ridiculous. But having said that, I personally wouldn't be comfortable in that dress and I would feel weird about it and kind of, you know, maybe shame about, I think lots of us have shame about our own breasts and our where our nipples sit and how our breasts sit and blah, blah, blah. So it's great to see someone like Florence kind of owning her body and saying, look, you can say whatever you want, but I'm not going to take it on board.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I wouldn't be popping on a sheer top and swanning around with any bra. That is my choice, but I do not care. It does not move me in any way when I see, you know, someone else's nipples. And I think it is so strange when you see an
Instagram. I'll be honest. I'm delighted to see people's nipples.
When I say Frida, you say Frida.
Nipple.
Yes, exactly. Thank you, Louise. Yeah, I don't care. But it is a lot when you see, you know, on Instagram, you'll see a male torso or a torso that doesn't have, you know, large breasts, a lot of breast tissue. And then you'll see, you know, maybe a woman's body. And then there's two little like suns or stars over the nipple part of it. It's so strange.
And it's so like, pointless. You know,
is it the fleshy part of the breast that upsets you? I don't know.
But it all just contributes to this wild culture of shame and kind of secrecy. And, you know, when the reality is, I was in Barcelona recently. Everybody knows I never stop going on about my travels. But I was in Barcelona recently. I was on the beach with my friends. And the beach we were on was, I don't know, was it officially a nude beach? But there were lots of people in various states of undress. And there were most women were topless. Some women were completely naked. Some men were completely naked. And like at first you're kind of like, what are we doing here? But the thing is, you sit there for a couple of hours and then it becomes completely normal and you're unfazed. And like, you know, my friend and I had a conversation about it. She said, do you think if we'd grown up in a culture like this, we would have less body hang-ups? And I was like, yeah, I think so. Because if we saw different types of bodies, if we saw the reality of how, you know, the full spectrum of bodies look from tit to dick, like we would all be so much more comfortable with it all. But, you know, instead we live in this weird bizarre land culture where it's like, you know, these kind of shamed private parts. And of course they're intimate parts of our body and we all should have control over who sees them and who touches them and all the rest. But, you know, the level of kind of, you know, tape we wrap ourselves up in maintaining these levels of secrecy and privacy. I don't know. It's sometimes I think it's too much. I don't know if that made sense. I feel like I went on a long and rambling rant there.
No, but I think I think it's like we save our bodies. I mean, not that you can do whatever, you can show it off, you can wrap it up in, you know, cling film if you want, do whatever you want. But we save our bodies until they're the right way, whatever that is. And that changes. And it's like, we could just be out here living our lives.
Exactly.
And just,
you know,
yeah. And I, So, I mean, I was away recently. I was in, you know, my swimsuit prancing around and now I'm down here in Mayo and I'm like kind of used to it. Like just, so I'm like, I just jumped into the sea, whereas I probably would have thought about it a bit more before, but I'm, you don't care. Yeah,
well, Esther, like, I mean, since we started recording this podcast in the nude, like it's definitely done wonders for me and my comfort levels. How about you?
Yeah, I just love being free. I feel the breeze. I forgot that we record this in the nude. You're right.
You see, that's how comfortable we are with it, that we don't even think about it anymore. Yeah. Well, Esther, never apologize. Thank you so, so much. And I really appreciate you taking the time when you're on your holidays in Mayo. I hope you have a lovely one and we will talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon. Thank you, Louise.
Now it's just about time for me to go, but before I do, I do have a few recommendations for you, starting with Orla Gartland. I went to see Orla play in Whelan's this week. It was brilliant. She is fantastic. And if you're not familiar with her, I just thought I would mention her because she released an excellent, excellent album. I think it was it this year or last year? Anyway, it's called Woman on the Internet. It's such good, fun pop music. She is an amazing songwriter, like really brilliant, brilliant performer. She is on the way up. And if you want to get on board early, I would get on board now because I don't think I'll be seeing her in Whelan's again anytime soon. And I think she'll be on to much bigger venues. And she's an Irish artist based in London. And we should all support her because she is such an incredible talent. Then I wanted to recommend Mother of Pod. Now, I was listening to Mother of Pod this morning, laughing my face Face Off. And I was thinking, oh, I don't think I've recommended it specifically on this podcast. But if you have listened to every episode or whatever, you'll have heard me interview Sophie White, who's one of the co-hosts of Mother of Pod. Herself and Jen O'Dwyer host this podcast. They are two of my very, very good friends. So obviously I am a little bit biased, but actually in a way, I think being friends with someone and, you know, their podcast, it can almost work against you because you know them so well. But I honestly think, like, objectively, this is a really excellent podcast. It's basically the two gals. They catch up every week. Ostensibly, it's a parenting podcast, and they do talk about parenting, and they talk about, you know, in very real terms. Like, there's no, you know, every day is a blessing, sunshine, lollipops kind of chat on this parenting podcast. So if that's what you're looking for, definitely go elsewhere. It's more about the reality, the situations you find yourself in, the terrible things your children say to you sometimes, the days that you wish you could just be anywhere else, all that kind of crack. But also they just, I mean, honestly, at this stage, they talk so much about snacks that it could be just a snack podcast. But whatever they're talking about, it is always clever and considered and always, always funny. I cannot recommend it to you enough. It's a subscription podcast, so it'll cost you €4 a month, but it's, you know, it's €4 a month well spent as far as I'm concerned. They do two episodes a week, a main episode, which is usually about an hour, and then and I'm air quoting here, mini episode, which is supposed to be shorter, but often ends up being an hour as well. And they take kind of contributions from listeners and they discuss different topics. And it's just a brilliant podcast, genuinely. So if you want to subscribe, I'll put a link in the show notes so that you can link and subscribe and enjoy. I heartily recommend it. If you're looking for some candy floss for your brain, The Summer I Turned Pretty on Amazon Prime is exactly that. It is based on, I think, a young adult novel, the same author as, oh God, To All the Boys I've Loved Before. To All the Boys I've Loved? To All the... You know that film. You know the one I mean. The one that was huge on Netflix. Anyway, it's about this girl, Isabel Belly, and she ends up in a love triangle, basically, with two brothers. But it's the music is good. It looks visually good. It's just like very, very easy to watch. If you just want to switch your brain off, I would recommend it. And then my final recommendation this week is something that I'm going to be doing tomorrow on Saturday. Well, actually, it's not tomorrow. My final recommendation this week is something that I'm going to be doing on Saturday. I will be bringing my family to the Trans and Intersex Pride March, which is starting at the Garden of Remembrance at 2 p.m. in Dublin. And basically, Trans and Intersex Pride is able to march this year for the first time in a few years, obviously because of COVID. And honestly, I don't know if there's ever been a more important time to kind of stand in solidarity with trans, non-binary, intersex people, because obviously the culture has become really toxic and they are experiencing a lot of negativity. They are encouraging everyone to go. They want as many people as they can possibly get to kind of stand together and fight for bodily autonomy for trans and intersex people, as well as, and this is in their words, as well as an end to the transphobic and homophobic attacks we've witnessed over the past few years. That's all they want. All they want is their bodily autonomy and a right to live safely. And, you know, I think sometimes in the current way that, you know, trans people's very existence is being discussed, there's a lot of red herrings. There's a lot of people trying to suggest that trans people want to kind of take over the world or erase women's experiences and, you know, erase women's existence. And honestly, I have never met a trans person who is in any way inclined in that way. All they want is to be able to live a life safely as the person that they are. And I will always, always back anyone's right to exist in their truth. Always. You know, if you're not doing anyone any harm and all you want to do is live a peaceful life as yourself, I am there for you. And that means I am there for trans people. So I will be there at 2 p.m. marching from, as I said, the Garden of Remembrance. They'll be going to Merrion Square. I'm bringing my kids. I want, you know, to see loads and loads of people there to support people who are so vulnerable and just at the receiving end of so much absolute trash at the moment. So I'd love to see loads of you there. And if you do, don't be afraid to say hi. So yeah, there you go. That's it. That's all from me this week. I will be back with you next Friday with another edition of Catch Up. I hope you have a lovely one. And if that doesn't happen, I hope you just get through it. One foot in front of the other. Everything passes eventually. Okay. Talk soon.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.